This is The View from Tab. I'm Jim Minnick.
And I'm John Cruz.
And there's no one else. It's just the two of us this time. But we're going to have a short conversation. We almost didn't have anything. We were just gossiping. And we were calling everyone every name under the sun.
We were the Illuminati of the Northeast.
Exactly. But, and then we did some power brokering behind the scenes and changed life as we know it on the planet. But then we decided we would record something. Anyhow, because we have people who actually want to hear us talk about stuff. We don't know why, but we know that there's somebody out there that might want to hear us. Anyhow, last week I tried to record a show with Ryan Miller and PJ Wexler. Ryan is originally from Dallas Town in Pennsylvania, and PJ is from Needham in Massachusetts. And we had a conversation. We were talking about the number of LD topics. And I had written in my blog a piece about when I started back in the day, we had more LD topics than you could shake a stick at. We had a September-October topic. We had a Big Bronx topic. We had a November-December topic. We had a January-February topic. There was a Harvard topic. There was a States topic. There was a March-April topic. And there was the Nationals topic. So there was something like 7 or 8 different topics. So every time you turned around, you had a new resolution that you were arguing. And that became sort of coin of the realm. I mean, that was the expectation, that we were going to have that. And over time, I mean, the first thing that went away, I mean, Harvard went away, actually was gone, I think, right when I started. Or that was when they stopped having their own. Bronx went out. When did Richard was the one who stopped
sure.
having his
Late,
own, right?
Late 90s, I think.
Yeah. So he stopped having his own. And then we got into a situation, or we've gotten into a situation recently, where we have the September-October topic, November-December topic, and the TSC topic. A handful of people will debate some other topics in the second half of the year as the calendar turns, right? But most people just debate that. And you and I, John, you and I were talking about doing a, you know, we did this last year. We have a state tournament. And we ran the January-February topic, although the tournament was, I guess, in March, or April even, because we said, well, people will come because they have cases already. And that's neither here nor there, the aspect, well, should people have to write cases right. like that? More to the point is, and the question that we were discussing last week is, you know, is it better to have a lot of topics? I mean, I'm curious about your position on this. Do you think it's better to have a lot of topics or to have fewer topics? Ryan had actually proposed at one point, you just had a first half of the year topic and a second half of the year topic.
Well, that's interesting. And I've sort of thought a lot about this because let's take public forum debate for a moment where the topic changes every month. So
right.
clearly you are never going to have as in-depth knowledge of the topic as you would in policy debate. I mean, that's one of the big advantages of policy debate is you have this broad topic that by the end, you really are an expert on the topic. I mean, the knowledge level that you get on a specific topic area in policy debate is, in my opinion, unmatched by the other debate events. And I can see that observing.
I absolutely agree completely.
Right, I mean, at the end of the day, my policy debaters are going to know way more about the United States space exploration and development of, you know, of outer space, then my public forum debaters are going to know about birthright citizenship. And that's just clear in a casual discussion with them about the topic. And that's no insult in PF. What that is a reflection of what the goals of the events are, right? I mean, there's something to be said about getting a wide breadth of topics where you are sort of involving yourself in current events issues that are ripped from the headlines, that are very, very current, talked about and whatnot. And there's something also to be said about being phenomenally knowledgeable about a specific area of public policy.
Right. And I agree with you on both of those.
Yeah.
I mean, they have values that are different, and the way those activities work are pretty good. I mean, I've been doing PF lately, and every time I turn around, there's a new topic, which personally I like. You know, we go into it, like we were talking about Pakistan for the last couple of weeks,
yeah.
and you start getting really deep into this. And then, I mean, I'm a very superficial person, so I'm really happy to go on to another topic after a couple of weeks. That's fine. You know, but the nature of the debates is radically different, and it's
sure.
not a question of one being better. They're just different. Yeah, and you're learning different things, and the educational value I would suggest aren't terribly different in terms of they have educational value, except one is this value and
I agree
one is that
completely.
value.
And actually, I think that, you know, I've said this in other podcasts. I think it's actually a little unfortunate when debate coaches of any stripe get like pick, you know, get into a mode to like pick on the other events. That's just really silly. They're all valuable in their own ways. Like, for example, not to be on a tangent, I promise to return to the topic in a moment. But we actually had a really cool thing in Bronx Science today where these teams from Canada were visiting New York because they're going to the Harvard tournament at the end of the week. And the coach emailed me months ago.
Do they know that Harvard's not in New York?
They do know that. I think they were doing some kind of swing through the Northeast to look at colleges as well as debate, which is not uncommon for people going to these big college tournaments. Yeah. But it was fun because they contacted me a few months ago. And they said, can we have a scrimmage with you to do public forum debate? Because we do parliamentary debate in Canada and we want to make sure that we know what we're doing before we go to this tournament, which is probably a good idea to know what you're doing before you go to a debate tournament.
I've never found that to be useful.
Well, the reason I mentioned it is just that it was interesting because it seemed like so just to add, you know, yet another topic kind of debate format in here that, you know, there are different flavors of parliamentary debate. And some people like parliamentary debate because they feel that it gives like a bigger emphasis on like traditional rhetoric. And other people like it also because in many formats of parliamentary debate, the topic changes like round to round. Like it's really like an almost an extemporaneous kind of debate. So like we really – and remember, this was public forum. We're not talking about policy or LD. It really was interesting to see how shocked some of these kids were by the questions some of my debaters were asking, because my debaters would ask questions like, you know, what is the methodology of the study that you're talking about in your constructive? And it seemed like that was not something that had been previously considered. So I mentioned this because I think what is interesting about the creation of PF is that it has put LD in many ways in a weird middle ground, right? Because you've got the PF topic changing every month and you've got the policy topic never changing for the whole year. And then that puts LD in the weird mode where it used to be that the LD topics seemed like they were so short, both because every 2 months was a lot shorter topic length than a year. And as you said, there were additional topics on top of that. And,
But even 2 months is a relatively short span.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so it seems like there is already a move in some quarters to artificially lengthen, obviously, the January-February topic because of the incentive, if you will, of preparing people for the TOC, which is curious because only 72 kids are going to go to the TOC in the end. And I've always kind of felt – and you know, I understand the counter-argument here, but I've always felt that actually the TOC having its own topic would sort of even the playing field – a lot for people who can't afford to compete as much on the January-February topic, and would also reduce and I love Blake, so this is not a slight towards Blake. That's in many ways it's my favorite travel tournament of the year. But it would reduce the need to have the overreach of January-February. I kind of like having a November-December topic that I can debate for 2 months, right? I find that cool, and like the idea that we're already thinking about January, February seriously at the very first day of December because we're getting ready for a tournament in 2 weeks it's pressure. And that's not just pressure on us. That's pressure on everyone going to Blake, which is a huge tournament. Blake is also kind of interesting because there are a lot of kids who compete there who are basically like local Minnesota debaters, right, who don't think about the TOC at all. It's sort of like the big end-of-season tournament for them because in Minnesota they have a half season of debate and a half season of speech. And what I find fascinating about that is that we pitch – you know, we being the collective we, I'm not in the Blake tournament administration, but we think of Blake as like the January-February startup topic. But I wonder if a lot of the Minnesota local debaters like that tournament because it's the evening the playing field. No one has debated that topic yet, so everyone is on the same page and no one benefits from having tons of tournaments ahead of them. And that no doubt is why a lot of strong Minnesota local debaters really are not held back by resource disparity at that tournament as they might well be at other later tournaments, so I kind of like the changing topic thing. This is probably the high school, this is Great Neck South JC speaking now, but I know when I was in high school, I really liked the idea that at the end of the year, I got to debate a wide range of philosophical issues on different topics. I think there's something cool about that. And I think that it's sort of like not too hot, not too cold. Like 2 months is a really good length of time, I think, to develop a wide variety of arguments, get them in a few tournaments, change your cases around, really learn the topic. Now, the I think the larger and related issue is that there has been a movement I don't know how to put this without causing offense, but there's been a movement in some areas of LD, in my opinion, to stop debating. In other words, to debate so much about debate that it's not I don't feel like I'm hearing a difference in arguments between resolutions. And this is not just a general criticism of theory. This is sort of a criticism of the shallowness of many theory arguments on LD topics, where I feel like if we're just going to debate about permissibility over and over again, or we're just going to say the same shell over and over again, then I guess it really doesn't matter how many topics we have each year, because we're just making the same arguments topic to topic. Mm-hmm. And I used to be able to say, you know, that's just a problem at circuit tournaments, but it's not just a problem at circuit tournaments. People do that all over the place, I think, in my experience. So I guess... Well, I don't know. That's not really answering your question. I just had a long tangent about everything under the sun.
Yeah, but I mean, when we talked about it, I mean, I'll just summarize what we said last time, which was we never really came to a conclusion. I mean, you know, because you can come up with arguments that sort of say, well, it would be a good idea, because you could go, I mean, we're making a presumption. I was going to say you can go into depth on the topic, but that makes a presumption that people are actually debating the resolutions. And also there's another thing to be taken into consideration, which is back in the day of having all these multiple topics, the real thing was the underlying topic was roughly the same. I mean, the concept was there were some broad philosophical, ethical considerations, and primarily the biggest one that came up over and over again, although there were others, but the biggest one would be the individual versus society as a whole. But there were other things about free speech and things like that, but a handful at most. But it'd be worded a little differently. So you were always looking at, you know, roughly the same material, but in a different way. The thing was, and this is what I liked, that material was the richest philosophical material imaginable, especially for people who are just beginning to learn philosophy.
Right.
I mean, the Enlightenment material is fascinating stuff. It's accessible stuff to a broad number of people, and it's accessible stuff and it's still viable stuff in philosophical, ethical terms today among, you know, your most elite of philosophical scholars all know this material and understand this material and use it. It's not like, you know, we don't use leeches anymore in medicine. I mean, this is all, you know, informs all the thinking. So it allows you to get a broad understanding of the concepts that you're dealing with, because you debate on this topic, then can you apply the same thinking to another topic? So I really like that. But I think, you know, that universe where at the end of a Lincoln Douglas career, a person really understood philosophy, which is a rare thing. I mean, people don't understand philosophy. High school students have no idea what philosophy is. And, you know, college people, it's just philosophy is the most boring subject in the universe, because it's just like dull books and dull teachers. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating stuff, but it's not this great, exciting academic study unless you're really, really into it, as compared to some other stuff where you don't have to be into it and it can be really exciting. Like, you know, film 101. You don't have to be a movie director to enjoy going to the movies for 6 months and taking a course. You know, so, you know, it's dry, difficult material. But we took a broad number of people and really... Yeah, gave them understanding of this. We don't do anything remotely like that. And the thing that people learn nowadays is, like you say, the shells and rhetoric and stuff like that. I mean, they're going to learn debate about debate, which to me is extremely narrow and relatively useless. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great, it's like crossword puzzles, which I love, but they don't do anything.
Yeah,
I don't, you know, you get smarter because you're exercising the muscle, but you don't learn anything. So, you know, that was what was happening back then. But, yeah, that doesn't really address the issue. I mean, 27, you know, 7 or 8 topics versus 2 topics. You know, the other thing which became the more interesting argument, and I did post this on my blog, was just the selection process itself. I mean, which is extremely rushed, because you have a thing where you get a bunch of people to go down to wherever the tournament is, the nationals, and in the space of a couple of days, you know, they do some work in advance, I realize that, but essentially in the space of a couple of days they come up with a list, and then over the summer when nobody's thinking about it, I guess we're supposed to vote or something, but you know, it's all over by September 15th or September, very early in the year, and we've had no discussion about it, and it's like essentially the internet doesn't exist, that we aren't living in 2012. Yeah,
right.
We can come up with a list of topics. We can offer the broadest spectrum or a very narrow spectrum or a very targeted spectrum, doesn't matter, and we can have levels of discussion on these topics and make them really good so that you don't have a topic and everybody looks at it and then all of a sudden everybody says, wait a second, you know, because we put this one word in here, this topic sucks, and everybody's already voted on it and you're stuck with it, and especially if it's a January, February topic. But we go back to topics like the trolley topic. I can't remember the topic. All I can remember is talking about the guy being thrown in front of the trolley. You know, that morality topic, and it was a September-October topic that was virtually the... Yeah, impossible to train novices with that topic. So you just couldn't, you know, train people about LD with that as a starter topic. Sure. And so you're, you know, you're at the mercy of other forces. You know, so, I mean, the kind of ability that we have today, which, and now Ryan's idea was just, you come up with a bunch of topics and then you sort of post them. And then at some point after they've been posted for like a year and everybody's argued about them and does something, and then you sort of vote and you pick a couple or you pick one or whatever the case may be. Yeah, but you've had the opportunity to think about them and talk about them and argue about them and discuss them. And, yeah, because what the hell is the rush? There is not a LD topic out there that is of, you know, important in the moment. You know, you have public forum for that. I mean, or you have, you know, extemp. You know, you have activities to do that. Lincoln Douglas, which, you know, even in its, like, worst case scenario, is still about morality and obligations and rights and all this kind of stuff. Those things are fairly constant and don't need to be attached to a timely topic. And usually when they're attached to a timely topic, the wording is dreadful. You know, and yeah, in the past when we've had them, or they're so narrow that it's the same debate over and over and over again. I mean, there have been times when you just want to kill yourself because the debates are just, oh my God, I've heard this 1,000 times. You know, it's just handful of stock arguments. You know, so why isn't the NFL availing itself of the 21st century? Because it was the real question. And why are they doing this a better way? Yeah, the bizarre way that they're doing it now, or the way that they're doing it for no reason. They're only doing it that way because they do it that way.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I think the first thing is that I am of the belief in...
Are you on the committee?
I was on the topic committee this past year.
So you know how, I mean, you were there.
Sure.
You know,
yeah, it was very difficult to work with a lot of the topics that we started with because they were very poorly written. I mean, I actually gained respect for the topic word committee.
By the way, I didn't say this now, but we said it last week when it didn't get recorded. We have nothing but respect. I think that given the limitations that the topic committee has, they have progressively done a better job every year. I mean, this particular year, I thought it was a spectacular list. I mean, there's like, what, 10 or 15, and there were like one or two that I didn't like, and all the rest said, you know, these are debatable, which is like really good. Most people are going to be predisposed to think they all suck, and they don't. You know, very good job being done. It's just not, you know, as good as it can be if it's going to be done that way, as compared to as good as it can be, period. And that's a different thing. Anyhow, you're saying.
Well, I just think that the... I'm trying to think of how to put what I was going to say. To me, the bigger issue is not how many topics we debate. It's how the topics are presented in the first place. So, and I know we've talked about this before, but I really think that there's an issue that we don't have like position papers on resolutions. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the much stronger aspects of policy debate. And, you know, I didn't know anything really about policy debate other than the very fundamentals before I came to Bronx Science. I didn't do policy debate in high school. It seemed weird to me. I came from a background where there was no policy debate in my local circuit, and it was the thing that was like, oh, they're so weird and they speak so fast and they do these things. And so I was predisposed to thinking that policy debate was a lot of silliness, which it's really not, actually. I guess to the outsider, like the fast talking and some of the theory arguments seem really silly, but they're very, very developed arguments in policy. And one of the reasons why I think is from the very start, the topics are chosen in a very methodical manner that are very well thought out and community vetted and whatnot in a way that LD topics just aren't. So even if you were to have like, if you really felt our topic wording committee was like the think tank, and I think we're all pretty cool people who were on the committee last year, but I wouldn't necessarily say we're the think tank. But even if we were, you're going to still run into the natural problems of trying to do a lot of work in 1 week. It's just not possible to do it to anyone's satisfaction. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. No one raised the objections to the domestic violence topic that people have raised since.
Yeah, well, no, we had that topic. No one did. We talked about this before. We had a whole run through of using the topic. Right. And, you know, so yeah, you know, stuff happens like that. All of a sudden, it occurred. Wait a second, somebody says. Yeah, you know, until you haven't had the opportunity. If it's only a handful of people, you're much less likely to have that somebody come up and say, wait a minute, you know. And yeah, that's why opening it up to the community at large becomes much, you know, certainly a much better fail-safe for that kind of thing.
Right. Well, I think that that's very important because I think that any discussion about the topic changing or how many topics we have and whatnot is really ultimately artificial if we don't think about how it is that the topics are selected and presented in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, well, again, as Ryan said last week, the real issue is good topics.
Yeah.
Regardless of how many there are. And that's absolutely it. You know, you want good topics that people can debate. Yeah, and so first let's have good topics, and then we can decide how many. Yeah, so that's the conclusion we drew, and I think you're roughly, you know, dancing around the same idea.
To me, that's really the heart of the matter. Yeah. And I think that once that is resolved somewhat, then we can have a more meaningful discussion about what it means, like what is important, or how many topics are appropriate and whatnot.
I mean, there's certainly discussion about, you know, LD going to hell in a handbasket. That discussion has been going on for, 15 years at least, but I've only been involved in 15 years. No, actually more than that now. But anyhow, it's always been going to hell in a handbasket. Probably started in 1982 that people said it was going to hell in a handbasket.
Sure.
You know, but of the contributing factors, I mean, a lot of people want to say it's MJP, which I don't believe. A lot of people want to say it's this, that, or the other. And a lot of people argue that one of the things contributing to the downfall of LD is the topics. That the topics have changed. The topics have become this instead of that. And I don't want to make that argument for someone because I don't necessarily agree or disagree. I haven't thought about it that much.
I can just tell you that I don't agree with that.
Yeah. But in any case, I mean, if you know, there's my argument against people saying, well, MJP means that everybody's going to get all these college judges that are going to direct where the topic. No. What happens with MJP is if everybody actually used it, then the community at large would determine where the activity is going to go.
Sure.
If only the people who want to have judges who are in the colleges do it, then that's who's going to do it. So it's the people who are sitting on their butts and saying, oh, my God, hell, it's going to hell in a handbasket. I refuse to do that.
To put themselves in the judging pool. I mean, I think that that's just key. I understand that they're going to say they're going to be prepped out, but if they put themselves in the judging pool and then other people of similar minds do preferences, they're going to be judging rounds.
Yeah, there are bunches of people, and I know they're very strong opinions on this, but they're not putting in their own preferences. And then they're complaining, you know, my judges aren't getting rounds and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, if they had preference, if plenty of people, we know that there's plenty of people who feel on both sides of this. You know, we have a big, you know, a lot of people in the activity and a lot of different beliefs. And, you know, here's an opportunity to put those beliefs into action.
Sure.
So anyway, I'm just saying that if we had a thing with the topic where you could do likewise, then, it would shut people up complaining about the resolutions. Well, look, you have the... I mean, I don't think you can shut people up about the resolution. Say, well, you had a week in advance of the nationals, you could have sent me some topics. I don't think that's really it. But I think having it in a forum where people could look at it, and either you implicitly buy into it by doing nothing, or you express your opinions, or you vote over time, you suggest some wordings or something like that, it brings everybody into it. I don't see why it needs to be done by a small group of people. I like the idea of a small group of people as the starters. And as I say, the group that's doing it now is doing a great job. So that group becomes the starter group. And here's the thing. And every year they're going to put up, let's say, 20 topics or 25 topics. And then a year later, we pick five for the next year or something like that. That would work fine. You know, it certainly would work better than what we have now.
Because
the way it's voted, and I don't understand the preferential balloting that takes place. So that it's this, you have to vote for this, that, and the other. When I was voting on these topics, I have no idea why I'm picking this one in this month and that one in that month, and then I have it here and I got to go
about
that.
There's no justification for topics, and in my opinion, that's so crucial to have some sort of position paper so people understand what the topic is about.
I had some.
And I'm not saying that that's going to, you know, just to be clear here, some people say, oh, nobody reads those. Well, that's not really true.
No, like I just got, I got an email from.
Writes a very good position paper in the rostrum every year, and I think that it's worth it.
Stephen's a great writer. I just got a kid that wrote me literally today. I got a message from a kid. They're starting a team, and they were asking about the PF topic and an interpretation of the PF topic. And they say, can it be interpreted thus? And I'm saying, well, you know, normal people wouldn't do that, but in a debate round, it could happen. You know, because people, there is no starting point. I didn't say because there's no starting point, as you're saying it, but that's really true. So if, in fact, every PF topic came with a position paper, I mean, I know that they have discussion on PF topics, but it doesn't come before, it should come the day the PF topic comes out.
Yes.
You know, that's the other thing. I mean, they used to have these.
Kevin Kidd did a very good video thing for the
topic.
Does
he do it the day it comes out?
But I'm not sure what day it went up.
I know with LD, they say, okay, when they started doing this, we're going to have resources. We're going to give you some papers. I even was asked to do some ones, and I did this stuff. And it would come out halfway after the topic was being debated. Not even halfway after it was announced, but it was already being debated. It's worthless. Nobody needs a position paper a month before the topic's over. Yeah, it has to be the day it's announced. And you're right. And it's like a position paper, like you have position papers on policy. But of course, policy isn't determined by the NFL. You know, so the fact that the NFL isn't saying here's the policy topic may be why people are more satisfied with the policy topic and the way the policy topic is done.
That's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. The process through which the policy topic is chosen is a little weird, but... I'm not saying that we should necessarily adopt that system. Mm-hmm. What I do think we should adopt from it is the idea that you defend the topic, that you thoroughly work out the topic in a community setting, I think is just so much better. Mm-hmm. Or that you broadly vote on topic areas and then you write the topic. See, that I think is – because I think we kind of put the cart before the horse sometimes with writing LD resolutions. Because I think it's a good thing to say we want a topic about space policy. We want a topic about – birthright citizenship. We want to talk about animal rights. We want whatever topic we want to talk about. And then, you know, and then we'll take it from there. And then we'll write the wording that makes sense.
Yeah. No, because these are good areas. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the areas. But if the topics, if they're worded, all it takes is a little bit of, you know, nuttiness in the wording and you're done. You know, some simple as that. All right, but now here's the point where Chris Palmer comes in and says something, and then Beach says something. But since they're not here to say anything, we don't have to listen to their nonsense.
Oh, well, there you go. They're probably never going to listen to this anyway, so there you go.
They can comment on it in the comments.
Good, exactly, like everyone else.
Everyone else? The only comments we ever get are somebody anonymous says, when's the next one coming out?
Fair enough.
And that's it. Well, yeah, can't have everything. All right, so you're going up to Harvard.
I am, and we're sending a group of people down to UPenn as well. They're
we'll be down there. And it's going to be nice weather this weekend, which is good. This weekend can be miserable. I mean, the last few times I've been down in Philadelphia, and I've been crawling over, you know, 7-foot-high snow dunes or whatever. So it'd be nice to have that. But I do remember one time, and I was at Harvard, sitting outside in the sun and with my jacket open with Richard Sonica, who was sitting on the next post over, and we're just soaking up the sun in the middle of February. It's like, oh, this is pretty good. Yeah, so it can happen. You can get a nice weekend. So I think we're going to have one, which is good. So I will see you then. And then, I mean, I won't see you this weekend, but we will be having our Metro Hudson League blowout.
Yes, I'm excited for that. I want to do a podcast on that. We could do a podcast from the MHL blowout as far as
we need to do. I mean, one of the things I've done, and I'll say this on the podcast, is I'm here. I don't know where everyone else is. At 9 o'clock on Wednesday nights, if anybody wants to just come on to Skype and be there, we'll bring you on because we want the voices, we want other people's opinions on stuff. But I'd also like to be able to do remotes. I don't really know how to do it, short of doing what I'm doing now and doing it somewhere else, which is not really what I mean by a remote. A remote means you have some kind of equipment, so you put the thing on the table and it records and it sounds good. I don't know how to do that, so we'll learn. We'll figure that out at some point. All right, so have a good weekend, and see you next week.
Thank you, too.